The following is translated from Swedish text. Oscar Bush's book from a century ago and timeless wisdom dictated from the other side, how the destinies interwoven or twisted together. Great book about life and reincarnation, and cosmic fate. This book is really recommendable, but only released in the Swedish language on print, book. Oscar Bush, 1844-1916, was a Swedish writer who through spirit took down several books. Picture text. Like the strands of a rope are twisted, tied, together. Likewise are our lives linked together, our karmic bound to each other. The many strands are symbolic for our parallel life tracks and the people that you are destined to, are bound in the same rope. Note also that the back of the rope is symbolic of how life threads continues into lives on the other side, through death, and we also see how the same threads comes up again a little further along the rope. This is symbolic of the soul's return to this hard school, the so-called physical plane. The people we are especially linked to, destiny bound to, go into physical incarnation at the same time and our life threads forms parallel chords, tracks over a period of time. Learn more about how this happens in practice via book excerpts below, how the destiny is interwoven or twisted together. This book was dictated from the other side about more than 100 years ago and it says as the title reveals, how a person's destiny or fate is related logically together from life to life. What you sow in this life, incarnation, is harvested in the same or in the next incarnation. Such is the law, anything that is sent out of by thoughts and actions, will return, and trigger the effect. This relationship is described by spiritual science, especially in Martinus. And this book gives a vivid picture of how this appear in practice. Image of Martinus symbol of the living being's arcs of fate that binds the lives together, fits to insert here, regarding destiny. Oscar Bush, 1844-1916, had an excellent receptivity for messages from the other side. The book is very vivid and fully in line with the laws of fate/destiny that the cosmic, spiritual science describes. Introduction to this Oscar Bush's book, How the Destiny is Interwoven or Twisted Together. Headline, Pagan Time. The first chapter begins with how the main character was born in today's area outside the Swedish town Uppsala at the time when Christianity began to spread among the Gentiles in the Nordic countries. His name in that life was Grain, and he was a stubborn and abusive person, who soon came in conflict with his brother Ulf, who was more of a dreamer, a more sensitive human being. They also had a foster sister, Magnhild, as Grain later fell in love with, but she preferred his brother Ulf. This triggered Grain to hate his brother, and they soon became mortal enemies. When both parents were dead, Grain took over the farm and the other brother Ulf had also soon moved out. Grain is old, became withdrawn and angry, nagging, and lived alone on the farm. Ulf, the brother had married, and now lived on the neighboring farm, and they soon came into conflict about boundaries between the farms. Picture text. Illustration of Grain and Ulf, the brothers and half-sister Magnhild, in Swedish Viking time and these three would be tied to each other during several of their coming lifetimes, incarnations. Further from book, this first is a summary before the book text starts. Grain planned to kill his brother in secrecy, but before the plan was put into action, his own farm burned down. He immediately suspected his brother to be the guilty one, and swore revenge. He had heard that Ulf was absent from his farm the night his house burned down, which he took as a sign of guilt, that his brother was a pyromaniac or arsonist. He gathered together some farm workers and a late night they crept up on his brother's estate. To their surprise they were expected. They were met with axes and swords, and it was a fierce battle before both brothers and many others were dead. In chapter 2 the story tells how Grain was filled with hatred which followed him into his death. He woke up and found himself in a dark and painful world on the other side. To this world humans is attracted and pulled towards, by magnetic influence, into the same dimension/thought level world, as one passes over with. As a consequence, after death, Grain came to a cruel and negative world, analogous or in sync with, his own hatred. Like so many others who are ignorant about death, and how death is influenced by the life you have just left, He had by thoughts of hatred and fear created a separate mental prison, on the other side, as the Danish seer Martinus calls it. Well, hell is real enough for those who are thought trapped in the coarse frequency region, in the lower astral planes, where these worlds are real as long as the ignorance remains. He is there in his own captivity, his own prisoner. But it is no physical place, though what we call the physical is also only one, albeit very slow, vibratory matter zone. Foreword of the invisible author. There was a time when even I thought that Earth life encompassed both the beginning and end of life, or whether it also possibly was a misty future in a misty world beyond the earthly. However, it could not be any question of pre-existence. Least I could believe that evolution, if you were hoping for one, would bring us back to Earth again to undergo life after life. Such a thing had neither religion or philosophy, not science given any indication about. The earthly life, people thought, was the only tangible real in life. What might come afterwards was shrouded in impenetrable darkness. It was therefore with much surprise, I awakened here in a brighter world for a life just as real, but much more diverse and eventful than the one I left. It was with an indescribable joy I here met the friends with who have gone before me through the gate of death, and it was for myself a miracle that I almost immediately felt so at home in this new world, as if it were my true fatherland, my real home. It cleared to me, that I first have to mention, I was a citizen of this realm, on an entirely different plane than the physically tangible, that I had old relations since time immemorial, and that my earthly life had only been one episode, a pilgrimage in a dark and bleak world. Eventually cleared also memories from long ago past times, and I could like in vibrant images see. I've been on Earth before, not once, but many times. There is also here in a large archive something that can be likened to protocols or diaries, recorded by my own hand from all these previous lives. Short and incomplete admittedly, but enough to make the clue for the newly awakened memory. Those I have under my spirit protection, of rising interest studied, and they have told me flatly many obscure riddles of existence. They have given me the answer to many whys that the earth life could not give me. They have come to me so to discern, and understand, the tender care, the loving guidance, that we all enjoy. The righteousness and wisdom, which marks the divine world governing. I have also gained an insight into, or at least an idea of, what infinity of forces, this world governing have to its disposal, to do this holy will in force. By an act of providence, thanks to providence, and how it also, for the fulfillment of its purposes, has an infinity of time. Therefore it never missed the goal. The being we call God is for us utterly inconceivable, but he reveals himself in all things created / physical existing. In the smallest straw on ground as well as in deep space, blazing suns, and especially in our own trembling hearts, we see the works, and in such acts, as pure love, wisdom and power. No one can, from here where I now stand, looking out over existence, but be filled with cheers, thankfully. Filled with this gratitude, I would like to try to describe a few scattered extracts out of my own existence, including a few of my earthly lives and interim periods on the astral plane. This done so to my earthly readers, through a concrete case, might have a vivid picture of developments and insights, how logical everything is shaped from life to life, but also how slowly it all, and consequences of our own reluctance, creeps forward. Perhaps my story could even be of help to someone still in earthly life, - struggling neighbors. It is logic that I cannot, in this narrow framework, deliver any whole or coherent depiction of a life course. As this, covering 1,000 years of earthly era, I must confine myself to subscribe only to the most important episodes, as those affected by my relation to the brother I so deeply wronged, and the two women, so powerfully contributed to my development. As I also want to talk about my last earthly life, which is so close to our time, I do it in fictitious names and partly external conditions, because I, for the sake of still living relatives, should not be tracking those, or my own a person to search conclude my identity. My simple story does not claim any artistic value. Secondly, it is the first time I try myself as a writer, and my pen is not as flexible as I would like. From time immemorial I go back to the time when Nordic Christianity was first preached to the Gentiles. Yes, pagans we have called them, however, was their religion a better expression of their spiritual requirements than the new, and for those so strange doctrine of the white Christ, which was partly by fire and sword, forced on them. Though Christianity eventually became the dominant religion, continued for many generations the old pagan rituals, at first openly then secretly, because the church was strict to those still worshipping, sacrificed to their old gods. People hid away in mountain caves or in the darkness of the forest for the undisturbed exercise of the cults, lessons learned from ancestors and which went on more by habit and power of tradition, than of real conviction. I was one of those who opposed the new doctrine. Son of an old Ilodium/peasant family, which through many generations possessed the same farm, I was brought up in the old ancestral customs, as none should be broken, though they were fighting against what the church and society called the law. This fueled in me a defiant and hard temper, which from childhood was in my blood. When I was 12, my father died, and I, as the eldest son, became the owner of the large well-built estate with its many infields and large forests. It was located in the Uppland, not far from the old Upsal. Historis Kinfo? English, my mother's Sijin, who was a stern and strict woman, planed the spire during my childhood to hardness, and let me not infrequently feel that a violation of her bid came punishment. I had a brother named Elf and a sister named Thora. Also, we had a foster sister, a distant relative, who was orphaned early on, therefore was treated as your own child. She was named Magdild. My name was Grain Ulfson. One of my earliest memories is the funeral for my father. Relatives and friends were gathered from far and wide. There was a violent quarrel about his legs would be added at the stake by ancient custom or buried, as the new doctrine supporters claimed. I stood beside the mother and heard how sharp words were exchanged on both sides, until finally the mother banged his fist on the table and explained the legal age tons. Yet had none of her family put in soil and so would neither be done with old Elf. So was prepared a bonfire, and we kids thought it was literally that. Behold, the flames hit high in the sky. When a few years later the strict mother Sijin died, and she also burned during the great honors, for she was as honorable as feared and no one dared to even put the question, she would be grave. Now I was alone lord of the farm and had besides brother and sisters to mourn for a numerous crowd of household. Elf was bound and dreaming, but sluggish for all kinds of work. He went happily on the hunt and could be long gone. He ran into the woods usually alone, but then he could blow the horn or sing so that it echoed in the woods. Often he slept under the stars. Thora was diligent and prompt in all the chores, but rarely saw her happy. She had so long been under the pressure of her strict mother, that it took all her pleasure. Magnhild were of lighter mood, much beloved and cheerful. It stood as a shimmer of sunlight around her curly head. She was the only one who had no power over me, domineering and cold as I was. I went and brooded over, if I should marry her, but I noticed well that her heart rather stood to Elf, who did nothing back, but I came instead to hate Elf. The memories from this time are so dim and unreal to me, but a few things have burned in with firmer contours. It was in the autumn, when the grain was harvested. Elf had been away for several days hunting. Finally, he came home with his bow over one shoulder and the heavy burden of all sorts of wild games over the other. He threw their prey on the floor and wiped the sweat from his forehead. Sister Thora erupted in admiration for this, as he let it down. But I was angry, and went out with harsh words to him. He did not keep home and take part in the harvest work, but ran like a wild man in the woods. It came to a hard quarrel between us, and it might not have ended good, if not Magnhild, our foster sister, had thrown herself between and separated us. From that moment, Elf and I were foes. Magnhild joined to Elf, but he did not care much about her, and when he finally got married to another, she took the first who wooed and moved to a small farm further north. Elf had with his wife received a good farm, but its fields was bordering to mine. When Magnhild moved, it was as if my good genius departed from me. I became even more harsh and unfeeling. To our household, I was a stern master. The neighbors feared and avoided me as much as they could. Sister Thora thrived no longer with me, so she moved to Elf. Now I was all alone on my farm, but had some workers, thralls. So it happened one day that Elf and I met in the field. He went and stepped inside my land. "What are you doing here?" I asked. "Stay on your own side and do not go stepping into my crop, that is what I advise you. I go and look how far you have plowed your furrows over on my side. This piece is mine," he said, and waved his hand. "If you do not remove from here, I shall throw you over the trench." "Go rather home and hide in the bedstraw," he replied. "Here you have nothing to do." Now my blood was boiling over, I could not control myself. With a leap I rushed forward and stabbed him in the throat. It came to violent wrestling, which ended with felling him to the ground. Bloody and injured he stumbled home, but I knew that now was the battle between us to really begin. I went home and laid plans with Thrall Argrim, which was my only confidant, on how we could kill Ulf, so that no one could know who did it. We decided to wait a while longer till the last quarrel was forgotten, so the suspicion should not immediately be against me. Autumn went and winter came. One night I was awakened by alarms and screams. Argrim, who slept outside the doorstep of my house, came in and called out, "The farm is burning." "Ulf," was my first thought, but now was not time for long queries, had to save what could be saved, because the fire crackled already in the rafters. I gathered some weapons and jewelry, which had long been passed down within the family, and hurried half-suffocated by smoke out of the house. And next moment the roof fell apart, and the flames rose like a huge pillar of fire up against the dark night sky. I was saved, and all my household, but all my goods had been burned inside, and we stood in the middle of winter without shelter. Magnhild and her husband came visiting after the accident, writing and offered me hospitality at their farm until a new house was erected. But I declined the incident. I and my people could probably salvage us in the outhouse, the fire spared. "Why I'm pondering on who the arsonist is," I replied. But then my eyes must have sparkled with hatred, for Magnhild became pale with fright. Surely she sensed who I was thinking of. "I adjure you by the White Christ," she said, and threw her arms around my neck, "making him no harm. He is innocent." "Of that you know very little," I replied. "Do not make yourself unhappy. It becomes my business. To be suffocated by hatred is rather no joy." So they rode home to their farm. I stood a long time looking after them. Had Magnhild been my wife, or had I just followed their invitation, much evil and suffering had been avoided. It heard later, that Ulf the night when my farm burned, been far from home on journey to Sigtuna, but nevertheless I was certain that he instigated the fire. I was certain that now he should die. I armed my men, who were not late, when it came to take revenge on arsonists, and so we crept one night to the neighboring farm. It looked as if we had been expected, because at first alarm, were all men on legs and fully equipped. It was a hot battle. Many men fell on both sides. Finally stood Ulf and I face to face, each with battle axe in hands. I was tall and strong, he was fast and smooth. He slipped away from my stab, I defended myself for his, but soon I pushed him towards a corner and dropped him with a sharp stab to ground. A moment later I fell dead by a spear in the back. So ended this horrible brother dispute, which later would have such far-reaching consequences. Two in the cleansing fire I woke up in one of the world's deepest and darkest realms. What I experienced there was agonizing suffering. It is difficult to describe, and too embarrassing memories to be drawn up again in the now 1,000 years that have passed, and of course the veil of the relative obscurity of the horrors I then felt is not clearly remembered, and I am reluctant to expose them more than that to the context of my story. It took long before I got a clear understanding that I had actually left the earth. At first I thought that I was locked up in some dark prison because I had killed my brother, but wondered why no one came to ask me to account for my sins. Alone I sat there and moaned. I cried, but no one answered. I tried to crawl around in the dark, but the darkness did not budge, for everywhere I was caged in by over which muddy water trickled down. There was a large flat rock there which was comparatively dry. It served as my couch where I rolled up and tried to sleep, but no rest came. As soon as I closed my eyes, a voice cried in my mind, "O arsonist, a fire killer." As soon I woke, all the furies of hatred was raging in my chest. Sometimes there came over me a feeling of disgust at my own thoughts. At such times I seemed to discern a human being who came creeping up to me. He was enveloped in a dark coat and had a broad hat pulled down over his forehead so that I could not see his features. "What do you want?" I asked. "I want to help you, Grain," he replied. "Who are you?" "Your brother Ulf. Dash, I know you are lying, because he is dead. I have myself killed him."
"You were killed too. Don't you realize that you are dead too?"
"Who are you, stranger, who seem to know me?" Instead of responding, he took out from under his cloak a lantern which he held up to his face. "Ulf! Ulf!" I shouted. "What would you do to me? Once I have taken your life and can do it again. Get thee hence? Away from me?" With these words I rushed at him and had most likely given him a beating, if I had not at that moment been thrown to the ground by one, for me, invisible higher power. I felt I was tied at hands and feet, and had sensation of falling with dizzying speed. I had no idea where I was, and where I was falling to. Finally, the speed slowed and I felt I stood on solid ground. It was a horrible place I ended up in. A real hell. The air was thick with fetid exhalation. The ground was slippery with clotted blood, and the heat was unbearable. It was not as dark as my last place, and the light was as red flames passing over me. The whole country looked like a fire-ravaged wilderness. I was so horrible it cannot be imagined in your wildest dreams. I was not alone. All around me I saw creatures showing pain and rage. They had contorted facial features crawling around. Some wailed, others cried out, only a few were quiet and seemed to sleep. Link to video on a similar story, or iPad link, on this theme plus more. In the astral, the surroundings are partly MDA created by the people living in that particular matter vibration / frequency level zone, according to the spiritual science of Martinus, and as other research confirms. Rorem, it was the implacable hatred world I had arrived at, one of the divine world's big love purifying stoves, where even the hardest crust of hatred eventually are melted, and the slag from the fire being spooned from the more noble metal. How long you have to dwell in such a purgatory, depends entirely on yourself. The moment you let go of hatred and regret your mistakes, you are free, and pass immediately with a friendly caregiver to another enlightened world. Let no one misunderstand this so, that the horrific conditions is not intended as torture, to extort the detriment and confession, no understanding could be more mistaken. No, the external environment is everywhere on the astral plane, only the outer reflection of their inner state, in which he similar has abode. And it is the inner state, which is hell itself. It is the no remorse state, that make the inner torture, and who do not let the guilty rest. It is his vain efforts to quiet the inner voice which forces him sighs, lamentations and anguish cries. It's from inside that ultimately impulse comes, that at last bends his stiff knees and acknowledges his own debt. The sufferings of the unfortunate person is thus at the forefront of the psychological nature. They are the consistent verdict of his own evil, and likewise the easiest possible means to his salvation. But though the final impetus to submission must come from the unhappy self, he is not, however, left without the influence and support of others. An enormous amount of love apostles, who do not spare any sacrifice to save these unfortunate brothers and sisters. Without fear of the horrors and dangers to which they expose themselves, they go bravely down even in the deepest hells, and preach the gospel of love for the captives. But, alas, they can do so little. They are able to barely make themselves fully heard, from the poor unfortunates of rough and dull minds, and their words often die unheard. Very well done, however, that these brave missionaries, and they are many, by listening to their touching prayers, get rescued earlier than would otherwise achieved, to peace and reconciliation. Example: this book, How Long I Dwelt Down There,
How long I endured my inner torment before I had the power to bow in humble submission, I do not know, but it was an incredible time, which then seemed like an eternity, and that certainly in the underground region, cannot be estimated at less than a century. It is terrible how hate can bind their victims, but the suffering it causes is, thank God, even stronger. There is a purifying power that no one can resist forever. It is the spirit, the divine spark in our innermost being which turns into despair and do not leave us in peace until he can destroy the limiting bonds, whose ties of hatred and sin, makes us suffer our own hell. But it was necessary to go through this purifying fire, from where we shall come out purified and free. So, a time came for my liberation. I had heard a moving sermon given by a bright man, being/spirit, who often visited us. He came up to me and put his hand on my head. I sobbed violently. It shook my whole body, and there were hot tears of anguish, which melted the ice around my heart. The crying did not stop but turned into convulsive sobs. He caressed me a few times from head to feet, and I fell asleep. When I again opened my eyes, I found myself in an entirely different country. Although this place had quite difficult conditions, it had a deep twilight and a gray cold climate, but were a solace compared to those I left behind. Here I began to live under strict overseers. It was a severe hard work, that I cannot really describe, but which is most comparable to the work down in the mines on earth. I, who never had participated in the work on my farm, I had thought myself too good, and there down in the hell realms, was condemned to inaction. Now grasped eagerly this work, which for me was a relief after the inner, utter pains I suffered. Here, I lived over a long period, a relatively decent life though monotonous and heavy. One day my guardian came and told me to follow him. It was someone who wanted to talk to me. I dropped my hoe and went with him. In our barrack stood the stranger and waited. Imagine my surprise when I recognized Elf. He had come, he said, to beg me for forgiveness because he burned my farm. The prayer had weighed on his mind ever since he had come to realize how badly he acted. He also had it on his mouth when we first met, but did not get the opportunity to express it. Since then, he had not until now been authorized to look to me up. What could be your debt to me? I said, handing him my hand. Can you forgive me all the evil I have done to you? Dear Grain, he said, you have suffered more than your works are worth. I have nothing to forgive, but I have here with me a blank check for you. You have now finished your investigation in this cold and inaccessible world and get to follow me to where I have my home. Then, to my great joy, heard that you were ready down here. I begged my permission to be the one to show you the way up to us. So we followed. He brought me up to a slightly brighter sphere, where I could live with him. I had made available two large beautiful rooms, where the sun was shining in the morning. What it was good to see the sun! The landscape outside my house was not very beautiful. It was a large cultivated field with no trees, but the sun. Oh, what it was great to see the sun, which I have not seen for nearly two centuries. Here I had to start going to school. Good spirits, which actually belonged to a higher sphere than ours, took care of me and gave me the kind of education I needed. But here I had to work, though not as heavy as before. I had to help in agriculture, which seemed to be people's main occupation. Everyone was kind to me and I had it so well, I could ever wish for. The memory of that distant time has so faded that I cannot read them except in general terms. But the episode has carved itself into my memory. That's when my foster sister came and sought me out. I was busy on the ground to clear away weeds. Tired of crawling on all fours, I stood and stretched his back. Then I saw a female creature coming towards me, but she was unlike the women who lived in our sphere. She was brighter and more beautiful, and she almost flew, soared over the rugged land, where the rest of us walked with heavy steps. At first I did not recognize her, but when she stretched out both arms towards me and said, Grain, I'm glad to finally meet you. Then I understood that it was Magnhild. Picture idea of how the grain working heavily on the earth at a lower astral plane and are visited by former acquaintances Magnhild, who came as a kind of messenger from a higher level, with a more luminous aura around her. She wanted to help him.